Welcome to another episode of the AOT Pod. This is an FRCS themed podcast that we aim to use to support trainees within the UK region so that otolaryngologists of the future can prepare best for their exams. Today, I'm joined by Mr. Bered Barmer, a registrar based in the West Midlands, and today's theme is malignant salivary gland disease. We are pleased and privileged to be joined by Mr. Peter Deutsch, a consultant head and neck surgeon based in Worcester. He was also a trainee in the West Midlands not long ago, and completed his fellowship in Brisbane, Australia. He won the gold medal in the FRCS exam in his sitting, which is a fantastic achievement and makes him very well placed to talk to us today. So thank you both for joining us. How are you both?
Very well, thank you, Josh.
Yeah, good, thank you, Josh.
Fantastic. Take it away.
Excellent. Would you mind telling us about what challenges you faced at the time and if you have any tips for our listeners who are revising for the exam?
Yeah, I think It's always difficult because you've got to balance your work commitments and revision at the time. Something everybody needs to work out, but having good supportive colleagues and, you know, someone who's happy to pick up a bit of slack while you're off revising is always good, and people are normally receptive to that. Keeping a life outside of work is always important, but recognizing that you do need to knuckle down and do a fair bit of work for the exam. And the main thing I would say is to get all the work done for part one, and having a key resource that you're doing for that. I used one textbook and I went through it cover to cover, and that seemed to work for me, and then bits from other ones as was needed, brushing up on the key guidelines and resources. And once you've done all that for part one, part two becomes an awful lot easier.
And on a more cheery note, how did you feel and how did you celebrate when you found out that you passed the exam and also gold medal?
So, passing the exam, I think the part two, when you get to it, you get a feeling of how it's gone. Part one, no one really knows how it's gone. Part two is a bit more reliable, and you obviously always know you've messed up a station. I was relieved and pleased, and the family were glad to have me back. The gold medal wasn't expected, and that came several months later, and because it's announced after the second sitting, and mine was the first sitting.
It's a great achievement. Moving on to our clinical scenario now, if that's okay. So you're running an outpatient clinic, Mr. Deutsch, and your next patient is a referral for an 18-year-old girl with a lump in her cheek, and she's about to go off to a university. So what are some of the key questions you would ask in the history?
So as with any head and neck patient, you know, I'd like to take a nice, clear, focused head and neck history. Mm-hmm. When talking about the lump, I want to know specifically about the timing of the lump, when it came on, how long it's been there. Does it come and go? Does it change in size? And what makes it do that? If it does, thinking specifically about salivary gland inflammatory pathology. Is it associated to eating and drinking? Are there any other lumps and bumps in the neck? Have they noticed any lumps on the other side, the contralateral parotid or in the cervical nodes? Do they have any other systemic features of multi-system disorder? And then specifically, I want to know about red flags of head and neck cancer. So upper digestive tract symptoms, dysphagia, odontophagia, dysphonia, and dyspnea. Otherwise, associated pain is an important factor. Trigeminal numbness and facial weakness are obviously key. Formication, or the same sensation of things crawling underneath the mm-hmm. skin, is actually something you do see in clinical practice, so it's worth asking about. And trismus, so is there anything suggesting a deeper invasion of this tumour or lesion? So when you've got a focused history, then I need to go on to a comprehensive past medical history, specifically any other head and neck surgery or any other head and neck cancers, mm-hmm. thinking about radiation-induced tumours as well, if they had radiotherapy in the past. Mm-hmm. And with parotid lumps, it's always worth mentioning skin malignancies. Have they had a previous skin cancer, mm-hmm. Especially an SCC, and where, if they have, so is it within that, is the parotid within the nodal basin for metastasis from that SCC? Mm-hmm. And then social history, smoking, drinking, occupation, is a facial nerve weakness going to be a big thing for them?
So now that you've taken your history, how would you examine your patients?
So again, a full and comprehensive head and neck examination, focusing on the mass to assess for mobility. Is it fixed to underlying structures? Is it fixed to the mandible or going deeper? Are there any other masses? Is there a contralateral parotid lesion or are there any cervical lymph nodes? Are there any overlying skin changes? You need to get a good facial nerve examination. Sometimes if the lesion is over just the buccal, for example, you might have a very subtle weakness. A skin examination is also worthwhile because these can be metastases. Oral cavity examination, looking for any abnormal oral cavity, so such as a primary oral cavity, but also tonsil medialization, suggesting a deeper parapharyngeal space tumor. I'd also would do a flexible nasal endoscopy for the remaining upper area digestive tract mm-hmm. of these patients.
So the patient tells you that she's noticed this lump about 6 weeks ago, and she's noticed that this has been rapidly growing over the tail of the parotid area. There are no skin changes, and the cranial nerves are intact, and your intraoral examination is unremarkable. You cannot feel any lymph nodes in the neck. So at this point, what are your differential diagnosis for this patient, and how would you work her up to confirm your suspicion?
So differential diagnosis, as with any lump in the parotid region, I would want to consider them as benign and malignant are the first things that would be coming to mind. Benign tumours being such as a pleomorphic adenoma, specifically in this area. Wolfen's tumours, less commonly in this patient demographic. Monomorphic adenomas as well. And then when you're considering malignant salivary neoplasms, mucoepidermoid would be top of the list. Adenoid cystic, acinic cell, adenocarcinoma, but also things like SEC, metastasis, lymphoma, carcinoma ex pleo in cases where there was a pre-existing lump, and salivary duct carcinoma being less common. You can also think about non-tumor related problems. So it could be an obstructive salivary pathology. It could be infected pathologies. Mm-hmm. It could be a skin or a subcutaneous lesion. It could be a sebaceous cyst till proven otherwise. But given the patient's demographic, age, clinical presentation, I think your primary concern has to be that of a malignant neoplasm, especially mucoepidermoid in the younger patient.
Investigations?
Yeah. So I'd follow the UK head and neck cancer guidelines 2024. Doing an ultrasound guided fine needle aspiration cytology would be the first thing. And they're reported by the Milan system for salivary gland cytopathology. And core biopsy does take place, and it will depend on place to place as what you do, but most places will do an FNAC as your first line investigation with a core biopsy if more detail is required. I always get an MRI of the parotid up front on any case with the salivary gland tumour, just because it's going to be good detail, and I would always want a preoperative MRI, so you might as well just get it organised there and then. CT staging would usually depend on your FNA result. I wouldn't go down that route until I've got some evidence that we're dealing with a malignancy here. And generally, the staging would be an MRI of the neck with CT covering the neck and chest as a minimum, unless you've got a high stage tumor and you consider something like a PET.
So now you've got investigation results back, and it shows that on the ultrasound scan, there's a 3x4 centimeter mass that traverses both lobes of the parotid gland. The cytology has come back to show low yield, and it's showing mainly mucinous cystic elements. They've done a cell block technique on it as well, and that's been suspicious of mucoepidermoid carcinoma. The MRI scan has also shown similar findings, a 3x4 centimeter well-defined lesion without any neck nodes, and the CT of the chest doesn't show any distant metastases. What would be the staging for this patient, please?
This would be staged as a T2 tumour because it's between 2 and 4 centimetres in size, T1 being less than 2 centimetres. It would be N0 given the CT scan and the MRI findings clinically.
Now that you've got the staging and all the results, how would you go about managing this patient, please?
So I think it's worthwhile considering, first of all, that mucoepidermoid tumour is a most common salivary gland tumour in this age group in younger patients, and specifically in children. And they have a wide variability in what their prognosis and their outcome is. Mm-hmm. They range from low-grade tumours to high-grade tumours. And low-grade have a very good prognosis and need less aggressive intervention, whereas high-grade tumours have a really poor prognosis with a 5-year survival of only about 22%. So I think the first thing that anyone would want to do in this situation is to discuss at your local head and neck MDT with very close attention to the imaging to work out how difficult this is going to be, what your considerations are going to be with regards to the facial nerve and skin, various things like that. And also would want to discuss with the pathologist, as at the moment we have a diagnosis of possibly a mucoepidermoid carcinoma, but we want to see if there are any features on there suggesting it is more likely a high-grade malignancy or a low-grade malignancy. And actually, in some instances, it's worthwhile considering whether there's enough information that they're confident it's mucoepidermoid, or you want further information with things like a core biopsy, because that may influence whether you do a neck dissection and how aggressive you are. And it's also worth knowing those kind of things before you go in, because it might impact how you manage the facial nerve. But the outcome of the MDT is going to be surgery. Surgery is the treatment for all primary parotid malignancies. So I'll go on then. The mainstay of management would be a total conservative parotidectomy in the presence of a functioning facial nerve. And that would be when you're dealing with any confirmed salivary gland malignancy. However, if you were confident this was a low-grade mucoepidermoid, there's some role of more of a superficial or partial parotidectomy for low-grade tumours. If there's a facial nerve palsy preoperatively, the facial nerve should be resected, and you want to get free, you want to get clear margins. And I would be strongly considering using frozen section in those settings, because you don't know how long, how far that's gone along the facial nerve, especially in things like SCC. SCC has a tendency to get nasty perineural evasion along large nerves, and it may be that you need to set up to do a mastoidectomy and take the facial nerve back as far as you need to get a clear margin on it. If the nerve's intact, every effort should be made to save it. But noting that an incomplete resection and an R1 resection gives a poorer prognosis. So if you're concerned that the nerve is macroscopically involved, it makes the decision slightly easier. You need to be considering resecting the nerve.
And would you consider a neck dissection in this case?
Yeah, neck dissection and the extent of the neck dissection will depend on several factors. And that's why preoperative workup and getting the diagnosis beforehand is really important if you can, especially if the diagnosis is between a benign and malignant tumour. As if you're going in with a benign tumour, you're not going to be doing that. But if you're concerned about malignancy, that needs to be on your list. The easiest situation is an N-positive neck, so N1, N2, because it's clear you're going to be going ahead with a neck dissection. And that would be a modified radical neck dissection, taking levels 1 to 5, preserving IJB accessory and SCM. There's evidence to say that there's reasonable nodal spread in level 1 and level 5. So although most commonly it's 2 to 4, I'd include 1 to 5 in an N-positive neck or a parotid. Management of the N0 neck, that probably varies a little bit from MDT to MDT and surgeon to surgeon. Elective neck dissection should be done when you've got adverse features, high T stage, high tumour grade on biopsy. Some centres do frozen section intraoperatively to get a diagnosis, but that's not practical in a lot of places, and certainly it's not part of my practice here. Generally, in an elective neck dissection, should be levels 1 to 3 with your parotid basin, and that should be a total conservative parotidectomy at that point, because your parotid basin is all of your superficial nodes, but also the deep parotid tissue contains some nodes as well. In your low-grade mucoepidermoids, the risk of cervical mets is only about 2%, and so neck dissection is not necessary for those, but often it's a bit of a judgment call as to what you think you're dealing with in these settings. It's said that if you're going in and you've got a mucoepidermoid, in the hands of a head and neck surgeon, the morbidity from it should be relatively low, That's not to say that the morbidity is zero, and there's a significant amount of people with accessory dysfunction after even an elective neck dissection. You can stage the neck dissection if there's a lot of uncertainties and you're not really sure what you're going into, but you just got to bear in mind that that then becomes a bit more of a challenging neck dissection at the higher levels, level 2, in an already operated field. So, you know, you could always consider taking at least part of level 2 with your parotidectomy if you're considering staging it. Mm-hmm. So after surgery, adjuvant RT is something that we need to consider. Chemotherapies not tend to be indicated, but adjuvant RT is something that needs to be discussed with the pathology at your MDT for high-grade tumours, advanced stage tumours. If you've got involved margins, significant perineural evasion, lymphovascular evasion, extranodal extension, extracapsular breach, those kind of things. And specifically in things like adenoid cystic carcinoma, which have a high propensity to perineural evasion and late metastatic spread.
So thank you. That was a very good comprehensive coverage of the management. Would you mind going over the complications that you would warn the patient about when you're consenting the patient, please?
Yeah, so I consent the patient as I would for any parotid surgery. I'd mentioned bleeding, infection, scar. I'd always outline the scar to the patient that they're going to end up with, because they're often a bit surprised by it. I'd tell them that I'll likely leave a drain in afterwards. There's a risk of a seroma or a hematoma, silencing the salivary fistula. Frey syndrome, a first bite syndrome, are also worth mentioning about and describing to the patient what they mean. A facial nerve palsy is obvious, and I always dwell on that. I tell them that it's low risk, but there is a risk. More likely it's going to be temporary, but there's a risk it's going to be permanent. And I'll spell it out to the patients that if there's a frank invasion of a branch of the nerve, then I would be taking that nerve, which would leave them with a weakness on that side. I'll also talk about cosmetic change in large tumours. Young patients, they'll have a bit of a defect there. Greater auricular nerve numbness. It's amazing that people really, really get annoyed about that if you don't tell them about it. So I always spell that out as well. And then if you're going to do a neck dissection, you need to obviously mention all the risks of a neck dissection associated with it.
Absolutely.
I suppose the other thing to say is that if you're doing a total conservative parotidectomy, I would tell them that the risk of facial nerve dysfunction is a lot higher, and I'd expect them to wake up with a bit of weakness, but I'd hope that would be temporary.
Now, you've undertaken your operation, and during the operation, you find that the tumour has actually advanced since you saw the patient in the clinic, and now the tumour is sitting right on the nerve, very close to the main trunk. You're really struggling to get it off the nerve. And there are also some nearby nerves, actually. You open the neck up and you're suspecting there might be some metastasis to the nearby lymph nodes. What would you do in this scenario?
So I think there's two things to consider here. The decision is actually easy when you're considering a frankly involved facial nerve. And I'd always have that clear discussion, as I mentioned, with the patient preoperatively. If there's any chance we're dealing with a malignant tumour, no matter where it is, mm-hmm. I'd always mention about the risk of sacrifice of a branch of the facial nerve. However, if we're dealing with a tumour that's sat over the main trunk of the facial nerve, if it's frankly invaded, I'd still try and get another head and neck consultant or someone else who's around to cast an eye and check that I'm not making things up and check that they agree. Because in that situation, we've got to consider sacrificing the facial nerve as an R1 resection as a poor prognosis. If it looks like there is a plane of dissection, it's worthwhile considering trying to dissect the tumour off the facial nerve, because if it's intact and functioning preoperatively, you should try and leave it intact and functioning postoperatively. Sharp dissection is quite useful for those kind of settings, using a blade or scissors. The use of frozen section, again, if you can, and if you think, I don't know if this is tumour up against the nerve or not, you can send a frozen section, that's quite helpful. And you do have radiotherapy for those. But don't forget, if you left an involved margin or the nerve is involved, the radiotherapy is not necessarily going to be the panacea.
Yeah. So another thing that you come across, unfortunately, during your operation, as you're dissecting the tumour capsule breaches and you find that the tumour has actually spilled onto your field. What would you do in this scenario?
So I suppose the first thing to say in this scenario is that you should really take every effort to make sure you prevent tumour spillage, as is mm-hmm. the case with pleomorphic adenomas as well, because revision surgery in this setting is extremely hard, puts a significant risk at the facial nerve. So if it does happen, you need to recognise it, and that's the most important thing that you can do. Control the spillage. You often like to wrap it with a Ratec to prevent any further spillage. There's a bit of debate about what you should do with regards to washing it and things like that, with risk of seeding, but generally most people would wash it with some saline at the end of it, a copious amount to try and prevent any seeding of the tumour. The other thing is, it's important to mention that. It's important to put it in your operation note. It's important to discuss it at MDT and try not to hide it, because it's something that you consider radiotherapy for in an otherwise case that wouldn't need radiotherapy.
Absolutely. We've come pretty much to the end of this scenario. I just wanted to ask you how your management would have been different if this lump was found in the submandibular gland of this patient.
Yeah, so I suppose the thing that you need to consider here is that the submandibular gland tumours are generally higher risk. It's higher risk of being malignancy, so you've got to treat it a little bit more aggressively. You're going to have a bit of complexity around the marginal mandibular nerve, mm-hmm. Whatever happens here. So there's always mm-hmm. going to be a risk of weakness, but locating it and moving it, but dwelling on the point of marginal mandibular nerve injury to the patient is important. I'd be more likely to do an head dissection in these patients, clear level 1A, make sure I do a comprehensive dissection of level 1B to include the submandibular gland and also the perifacial nodes as well, mm-hmm. as these are all high risk nodal basins. And then you do 2, 3, 4 in an elective neck on that side, or 2, 3 minimum. I'd also, worth saying that you should take the facial artery and facial bone. This isn't a case where you want to try and preserve those. If you can leave a stump for free flap reconstruction at some point if they need it, but it's not one to try and be clever and save them because of the risk of leaving tumour.
Excellent. How would you follow this patient up after your operation, please?
So I'd follow them up as per the local MDT protocol. Generally, this would be for 5 years with decreasing frequency over this time. Things that you take into consideration, if it's an adenoid cystic carcinoma, longer-term follow-up is required, as they're known to have late follow-up, late metastatic deposits, such as chest mets and things like that. So that might change how you follow them up as well. Ultrasound may be useful to supplement the follow-up, or at least a baseline imaging of some sort. CT or MRI is good. Really advanced stage disease, you might get a baseline PET, something that you can repeat imaging again in a few months' time to see if there's any suspicion of recurrent disease.
Thank you very much. So now we've come to the end of that scenario. I just wanted to ask you if there are any other features that we should be aware of the other differentials that we touched on and named. If you wouldn't mind just going through some key features for us to be aware of.
So I suppose when you're considering benign lesions such as pleomorphic adenoma, their solitary lesion tend to be fairly indolent. Sometimes patients present they're having been there for a while. If you're thinking about the risk of that turning into a pleomorphic carcinoma ex pleomorphica, they tend to change over a fairly rapid period of time. They've had this long-standing lump that then increases in size, and then they end up with facial nerve palsy and things like that. Wolfram's tumours, again, are quite common in older people, smokers. Tail of parotid lesions tend to be the case, and they can be bilateral as well. Looking at the malignant tumours, we've talked quite a bit about mucoepidermoid tumours and the age categories that they can tend to affect, but that can be any age category. Adenoid cystic carcinoma have a propensity to late metastatic deposit and perineural spread. Adenocarcinoma has a HER2 positivity. SCC often is, more often than not, it's a metastatic deposit, and they have some element of a previous skin cancer. However, it's not always possible to identify that, but it's usually metastatic disease and should be managed as such. And the parotidectomy is part of a neck dissection in that setting.
Just another hypothetical question. What would you have done if this case had a parapharyngeal space element to it, if it had involved the parapharyngeal space and all the deeper tissues of the neck that you wouldn't necessarily be able to access as well?
Yeah, these can be quite challenging cases, and you can get that. More often than not, in that setting, you've probably got an involved facial nerve anyway, but not always. And if you don't, it becomes very difficult because you've got to go right underneath the facial nerve and deep down to do that. So I'd make sure there's good imaging. I'd want to see imaging with a CT as well, just to make sure there's no mandibular involvement and no bony involvement. I'd usually get another pair of hands along to an operation like this. Sometimes with these cases, you need to consider resecting a bit of the mandible or the TMJ in order to get down to where you need to get to. So having a maxillofacial surgeon around is also worthwhile with those, and making sure your workup is appropriate, because it just informs you of how you're going to go about things.
Yeah, absolutely. And some centers have the robots, obviously, as well, which is useful, but obviously...
Robot can be useful for isolated parapharyngeal or pleomorphic adenomas or things like that. I don't know of many malignancies that are being managed with them, and they tend to be... It would be a low-grade tumour that could be managed with the robot.
Fantastic. Thank you, Mr. Deutsch. That was a very good comprehensive review of the malignant salivary gland neoplasms.
No problems.
I'm just going to summarize what we've discussed. So to summarize, we have discussed salivary gland malignant neoplasms, focusing on a case of a mucoepidermoid parotid lump. Salivary malignant tumors are rare, comprising of approximately 5% of all head and neck cancers, but presence of such red flags such as facial nerve weakness should raise suspicion. The diagnosis is usually made by ultrasound and cytology, with or without the need of additional core biopsies. And these are usually reported using the Milan reporting system. MRI neck and CT chest are often the cross-sectional imaging of choice for staging and operative planning. The five commonest malignant tumors of the salivary glands are mucoepidermoid carcinoma, adenoid cystic carcinoma, adenocarcinoma, carcinoma ex-pleomorphic adenoma, and acinic cell carcinomas. Treatment requires a multidisciplinary approach and a shared decision-making along with the patient. Pre-op counseling and exploration of the patient wishes will also help with our intraoperative decision-making. The mainstay of treatment is surgical excision, and this would be either with or without elective neck dissection and post-operative adjuvant radiotherapy, depending on the tumor and the patient's risk factors. Thank you very much, Mr. Deutsch. Do you have any closing remarks you would like to add?
No, just the salivary gland malignancies are relatively uncommon, but quite an interesting group. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of decision-making things that need to be considered with it. So it's quite a good exam topic, so worth brushing up on.
Fantastic. Thank you so much again for your time. This has been a really good, useful overview.
Thank you so much, Berard, and thank you to Mr. Deutsch. We hope you enjoyed this episode of the AOT Pod. Be sure to check out our other topics. Give us a like and subscribe to get notified when new episodes become available. For more educational resources, please visit the AOT website at aotent.org and our YouTube channel, AOT ENT Education. See you next time.